Good morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now come to order. If anyone has any cell phones or any other audible devices, if you had silenced them now, it's not to disrupt the rest of the meeting. We'd appreciate it. If you'll stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Moving along to item number three, this is discussion and possible action, the approval of the agenda for May the 15th, 2018. Do you have any changes to make to today's agenda, Mr.
Wood? No, Mr. Chairman.
All right, is there any public comment regarding today's agenda? Hearing none, if I can get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda for May 15th, 2018.
I'll second the motion.
Been moved and seconded to approve the agenda for May the 15th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number four is today's consent agenda. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, I get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve today's consent agenda.
Second motion.
All right, we move to second to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now is item number five. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. I'd like to start this morning with our sewer line project coordinator, Mike Nevin.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, while Mike works his way up here, I want to introduce some key people that are in the audience. You always hear a lot of us on the team talk about the team. And I have worked on an awful lot of projects, and we've never had such a diverse, well-rounded, participative team that I'm going to introduce you to today with literally we have, I think, every key player that's here. In addition to Jason W., Mike, of course, under his leadership, and Sherry, we've got our external partners. And I want to kind of go down the list here in no particular order of priority, but I'm going to start with the company and the people that made it happen from a design standpoint. And the gentleman that designed this, I don't remember how many sheets of paper we're dealing with, much less manholes or miles of pipe. But Lucas Tipton is here from Far West. Luke, if you want to just stand and say hi. And I point these guys out in case you have any questions on the process itself. Today's intended to be probably the most comprehensive briefing because we're at very pivotal stages in this project that we're excited about. Also, they're the lady with the biggest whip I've ever seen, and that is not a comment that I throw out there in other ways, but Jennifer Herman is here from Far West. Jen is the one that makes sure that every T is crossed, every I is dotted on both the county side, on Ames side, and everybody. And also joining us today, although not necessarily on the pipeline project, but to show you the depth of the Far West team is Damon McAllister. Damon's actually working with us on some of the 6 mile stuff that we're working on. So we've got our engineering firm and our bases covered there. Jen's up here every Wednesday, and then there are even people that work for Far West that aren't here today that are out inspecting Jim's work. I'm going to introduce Jim here in just a minute. Next up are the people that, you know, again, 15 years ago probably, I think about when I got this job, a lady came from Far West, or not from Far West, from USDA Rural Development, and said, "You're really going to need us." And we could not have done this without USDA Rural Development. So we're extra fortunate today to have a gentleman who's relatively new to us, but is very important. And as I mentioned to him the first time I met him, he's my new best friend, and that is the State Director of USDA Rural Development, Mr. Phil Cowley. Phil, if you stand and just be recognized by the team. And then the gentleman that cracks the whip for Phil and makes sure that every artifact is logged, every change order is approved, everything is done. But I want to model the federal government. We work with a lot of federal agencies, be it BLM, be it USDA RD, be it EPA. We work with everybody. I have never come across a more cooperative, solutions-oriented partnership group as USDA RD is, And the gentleman that makes it all happen for them day in and day out is up here very frequently at meetings, on-site inspecting, giving us workarounds when we find things underground that we did not know were there. And that's John Nelson from USDARD. So, John, thank you. Now, you just saw five people gracefully stand and be acknowledged. The sixth one I'm going to introduce you to hates this kind of crap. He absolutely detests it. But as I mentioned, we've got a great team, and the great team would be meaningless if we did not have a great contractor. We watched what Ames Construction could do with USA Parkway, and they made miracles. And when I ran in to Jim Jarrett, who is our project superintendent, that I'm going to ask to stand and give no more than a 10-minute speech, Jim. When I talked to Jim and others from Ames Construction, they said USA Parkway was a walk in the park compared to this project. And I got to tell you, I don't think Jim has come across a single person that is upset about their road or upset about maybe water being out and not walked away a winner in terms of the project, in terms of everybody. He is the best ambassador I've ever seen from any company, and that would include, you know, the big projects that we're doing out in the industrial park. So, Jim, I want to thank you and Ames for taking time today. And if you have questions on the project after Mike walks us through where we are, we got the whole team here, okay?
Great. Okay. Thank you, Commissioners. Good morning. For the record, Mike Nevin, the project coordinator on the wastewater improvement project, providing you the update for today's commission meeting. Again, I want to echo Pat's comments, and I think we have a fantastic team that is assembled that is seeing this project from fruition to completion. We couldn't ask for better folks to be involved with this. Just very much appreciated from my standpoint. Excellent folks to work with, both in the office and in the field. So thank you all. Appreciate it. Sherry has been so kind enough to, again, assist her dad in making a little video presentation for everybody here today. This map here shows areas that are highlighted in yellow as areas that we have pipe installed in the ground. So this is updated as of May 4th. So you can see that on the right-hand column there, there's 30,720 linear feet of pipe that have been installed in the ground. That's just short of 6 miles, 144 manholes, and 267 service connections. And as of the 4th, we had completed our 31st weekly meeting of the team, and we're about 60% complete total project, 70% by pipe. I will take this opportunity to make mention that once we get into a project over 50%, then we can request that our contingency funds that are set aside for unknowns really in the overall project be released, and we can prioritize areas where we would like the project to continue with the use of those monies. So the first change order was approved by USDA, and that's what we call the Eastern Interceptor. And Sherry has got the pointer. You'll see it. It actually, from a layman's standpoint, basically, it runs from the fairgrounds, or just a little bit north of the fairgrounds, on I and L. We'll continue up through the fairgrounds area. Yeah, I can't really see it. CP50. So if you start there, headed south along that route, and that's a route of an existing sewer line that comes down off the divide. There are actually two sewer lines that come down off the divide where Sherry's got the pointer up on Sheldon. One crosses several
private properties up there that kind of comes to the east here, if you'll come down across the truck route there, and ties in on the other side of Ridge Street. The other line goes in front of our county clerk's residence, Vanessa's place, Vanessa and Carl there, goes up the road underneath the highway to the detention facility. You'll see a slide later that I have that will show you the bore. So we've got that boring complete underneath the highway there, and we did that in anticipation of someday the county in the future wants to build some additional county complex buildings over there, I guess to start with, possibly a justice court facility. So we've made certain that that area to the south of the detention center and the big vacant lot there will have plenty of fall and be able to catch the sewer at that point. The other thing we'll do is we'll continue up Sheldon there, and we'll catch that upper sewer that crosses down through several private properties and bring that down the Sheldon Street right away and tie that into that new main that eventually, like I say, will be tied back in to the system in Virginia City down near the fairgrounds or just north of the fairgrounds area. So we've been working with Tom Gray the last couple of days. We've got he had to remove a section of track at a crossing there that he utilizes for the shop area, and he pulled that up yesterday. We've got that line in complete. Part of the ballast for the track has been put back in place there. Tom actually has a train that's going to run back over the rail there on Thursday. So quick work. We're proceeding through the cut there. If you're familiar with that area, the V&T line runs through a cut there between that crossing and basically Ridge Street. So we're working feverishly to get that pipe all in before he starts up main operations on Memorial Day weekend. Well, we've been looking to utilize some additional contingency funding as the project progresses. As we come up Mill Street, we had to hold off on doing Q and O north of Mill for a while, so we're hoping to bring that back into the fold and catch that as well. And then there's some other little pieces way up on the upper end of town that are fairly new sewer pipe, plastic, SDR, we call it, in the field. So if funds permit, it's my hope to at least complete everything in Virginia City proper. And then, of course, this piece going up and catching the upper end of the divide there. So, again, just a massive project, as everybody can tell. I mean, you know, we've been at it on the ground here for, you know, many, many months. And, we have 430 days, not calendar days, actual days to complete the project. And we'll complete ahead of schedule, I'm certain. So, with everything, the loose ends have got to be tied in. You know, we might be looking, you know, September, October for final. But that's where we sit. B Street, as you well know, has been a little bit of a challenge for us. Just the way sewer and water were initially put in the ground back in the day. Water and sewer were pretty close, if not on top of one another. We've had some challenges, but we're working through them. The picture on the left shows our project superintendent, Hart, thought there. I couldn't resist him, but to throw this one in.
Where he does some of his best work.
The other photograph on the right, of course, shows our beautiful courthouse building there. Digging the two sewer laterals that come from the building to the new main. It kind of looks like a state NDOT crew standing out there watching one person work, but sometimes that's the way it is, unfortunately.
Those are the archaeological monitors. Those are not
angels. There you go. There is two of them there that are, actually. These photos here The one furthest to the west there on the left-hand side basically is showing an old drop inlet that changes the elevation between two sewer lines that came down Taylor Street at the Howard Street intersection. You can see the steel pipe there that drops into the brick. And that's the way we discovered it. There was sewer flowing through there somehow, some way. The second pipe came out of the bottom of that. We've kind of taken, you know, half of it apart there. But so you had a different pipe coming at a different elevation, about 4 feet lower than the top one. And, you know, that's typical the way they used to tie things in back in the day. Those drop boxes probably date back, the early part of the century, I would guess. The picture in the center is quite interesting. That's one of the archaeological monitors. It's a little hard to see on the wall there, but what that is it's an old water cistern that was located on the project. We knew there were several that used to be located in town here. After the fire of 1875, the county actually, word has it, I can't verify this exactly, but probably about 1877, they hired a contractor to go in and grout the interior of these brick cisterns. They probably held maybe 500 to 1,000 gallons of water, and that was water supply that the, you know, hose teams and the steamers and pumpers used to draft from to fight fire on the Comstock prior to the installation of the water system in 77. This was one that we found was about a third intact, even had part of the old redwood cover over it, and it's the only one thus far that we've run into. So we have to stop and spend some time, you know, cataloging and documenting and photographing that sort of a discovery. So that's pretty important. The two photos on the right-hand side, the upper one shows some sewer line lateral. If you look closely, you can see the holes in it. They were in the bottom of the trench. And this was an interesting, this building dates back to, oh, I don't know if it's pre-fire or probably post-fire, but Bucket of Blood Saloon here in Virginia City, owned by Chairman McBride. So you can see the condition of what we find in the ground. Marshall had made mention that, you know, over the years they have had issues with that sewer. There were two buildings there at one time, and when his dad bought the property, he converted him into one facility. So we have two sewer laterals like we do on several of the older buildings here in town that come out onto the street there. So we've got some work to finish up there, but that'll happen soon. The bottom one on the right, if you notice, the big looks like a big piece of concrete there. That was a drop box at the intersection of B and Sutton Avenue that we pulled out of the ground where the sewer line comes down B on the west side, comes down Sutton on the north side, and tied into that drop box there, and then that pipe continued down Sutton across C Street and down to D and eventually to Mill. But that was a big chunk that we pulled out there. And it's hard to see the little drop inlet there, the brick, and that opening is probably only about 6 inches in diameter. This one on the left shows how unstable some of the ground can be in different spots and locations. This is at the intersection of D and Mill, just off the intersection coming south. We had to make a tie in there to an existing manhole. It was a home-built manhole, if you will, to keep the sewer flowing until we come up Mill. But you can see the shoring that takes place in the trench. You'll notice if you've driven around town, some of the bigger boxes are maybe about 10 to 12 feet in length. Some of them are, you know, 12 feet high, and these are set in the trench for safety purposes. The one here in the center, it's real hard to see because it's in the shadow there, You see a gentleman in the vest on the left-hand side. He's got a cutoff saw. And what we had found, there's a section that comes down Taylor Street, crosses the B Street intersection. This is existing, or was, where they had a problem at one point some time back, and they had stuffed a smaller diameter pipe up an 8-inch line, and then that line was tied into an existing manhole at that intersection. So that all had to be cut out of the way so that we could place the new pipe in the trench there. The one on the very right-hand side shows the installation of a new storm drain drop inlet. It wasn't anticipated as part of this project, but when we were in there digging, we had an existing drop inlet there that was corrugated metal pipe, if you will. It was probably installed 30 years ago or so. It was all rotted out. So it needed to be replaced. We got a hold of a staff here and, you know, explained, and, you know, visually and, you know, verbally what needed to happen there, and got the approval. We actually installed two of these drop inlets on Taylor Street. For those of us that have been around here any number of years, certainly can recall that Taylor Street is an avenue for the upper reaches of the canyons above town here for collections of massive amounts of flow during both runoff and heavy thunderstorm events. And they certainly have taken a toll on that whole area up there. Even the pavement that existed was real poor shape. We also decided and determined to install curb and gutter on the section of Taylor between B and A, that's just south of your new parking lot there. And Jim with Ames is going to utilize some of his free spare time on a Saturday, possibly, to get that prepped for, you know, eventual installation of either a rock or a paver-type sidewalk along that path. But the curb will hold everything in place. And now that we have that paved, it seems to work out nicely. The other one on the right-hand side is one that we felt needed to be installed up higher, and that's at the Howard Street intersection. That's a real narrow spot there, and so that should help with the drainage. It'll go in. Those two are tied together, and they run down to the storm drain on Main Street. So just to show you a little bit of extra work, here's a picture of a couple of shots of, you know, the new asphalt. This is up on Stewart Street. If you're looking south there, you'll see Greg Hess Senior's house up on the hill there. This is basically in front of Bruce and Linda Larson's house. Bacha Galoops is their business, and they run a business out of the house there. So it shows how, you know, everything is now tied in. The picture on the right is Taylor Street with pavement finished now to the curb and gutter. You know, it turned out real nice. So we're progressing this week, hopefully, if we don't get rained out tomorrow, with paving A Street from the top of the hill above the castle and down and across Taylor to the Sutton Avenue intersection. And then we are continuing to do trench patching as the crews get it prepped and ready. So that continues throughout town as well. I think those were the last of the slides. Again, you know, a big thanks that we've already made mention. All of the folks that are involved are important players in the project. So certainly appreciate everybody and what everybody does as far as their individual efforts for the project. The other thing I'll mention is we've been able to utilize the crews. Paving is a subcontractor of Ames, and we've done some other little side projects here and there. We just completed two for the Story County School District on some improvements that were much needed at a couple of their facilities, the middle school and the high school. It turned out real nice. Maybe before the end of the week, you'll see us over on the Fourth Ward School property. We have approval to repave that parking lot there. It's kind of sorely needed. The center of the lot is in pretty rough shape, so as you know, we move around, we're able to catch and do some of that work as well. Of course, this funding is not part of the project, but it's other funding that, you know, gets dumped into the pot and Ames bills direct for us. You know, it's just everything kind of comes together. And, you know, some of these things you don't think about when you're putting a project of this magnitude together, but, you know, with everybody involved, it all seems to work out and mesh well. Around town today and tomorrow and for a few days now, you'll see a company. I don't know if they're Whirligig. Is that the name of the company, Jim?
Precision.
Anyway, what they do is they raise the manhole covers that are under the oil in the streets and bring them up to a level grade, as level as they can get with the, you know, the slope and, you know, the topography of the ground. So they're moving quickly. I was surprised. They just started probably this morning about 9 o'clock, and they've already completed F Street, and we're headed east from F down Washington. So you'll see some big barrel cones in the way in the middle of the roads. That's what they're doing. They use a big rotary type of a drill, if you will, like a hole saw, basically is what it is. It's probably about 4 feet in diameter, drill down. One person that, you know, I'd like to make mention is our current public works director, Jason Wurzbecki. Jason has been fantastic to work with. His team is always willing and able and responds in a heartbeat, no matter the time or day. So we couldn't do it without, you know, their involvement as well. You know, they're doing some of the locates for us, some things that I'm not sure of. You know, we just all put our heads together and, you know, we make it all happen. So, again, thanks, Jason, for everything you guys have done as well. That concludes my comments. I know I've gone way over my allotted 3 minutes, but at any rate, it's a big, massive project, and I think it deserves a little bit of extra attention at a public meeting every now and again. So if you have questions that I or any of the member of the team might be able to answer, now's your time.
Phil, John, do you guys want to add anything that from the USDA standpoint? I do want to point out, hopefully, I try to stay especially good on John's good side, because this is the second of what we hope will be four, I guess, major projects that we're working with USDA on. The next one, I think we're getting closer to going out to bid, mm-hmm. now that we've got BLM right-of-ways taken care of and everything, but that'll be the waterline project up above us, and then working both with, and it's amazing to watch a state agency and a federal agency work so well together, but that again tells you the quality of the team. I watch USDA work hand-in-hand, not only with SHFO, on the history of the area that we're digging in, but also now I'm watching them as well work with the state revolving fund, you know, on some monies that we might be able to maximize our borrowing and potentially some grant opportunities, yet again with USDA, while also leveraging the best opportunities with SRF. So do you guys have anything you want to add, Phil or John?
Thank you for having us up here. I just wanted to quickly just introduce myself since I am fairly new to USDA. So I started November 13th. I'm a sixth generation Nevadan, just lived down the hill in Dayton with my wife and five kids. I'm excited for the project that I see going on up here, and I'm sure that there's going to be some additional projects too that Story County is going to be in need of. So we look forward to working with you guys in the future, and just say good job on getting the sewer project well underway and almost complete. So
couldn't do it without you, sir.
No.
Well, I'd just like to say that, you know, we do a lot of projects. And having the team that's been put together, Mike's done a great job of keeping me in line. You know, he doesn't appreciate SHPO like I do. But anyway, we've worked through a lot of problems on this project, a lot of historic things that we need to protect, and the agency likes working with SRF. The idea of our agency is to combine the efforts of the State Revolving Loan Program, our funding, even CDBG at times, to find the best way that we can help communities fund these projects so that the finances are there to support the project and make it easier for the community to absorb these costs. And so I've lived here all my life. I grew up in Sparks. My family settled in Nelson, Nevada, down by Boulder City, 1800 sometime. I don't know. Anyway, but I've been up to Virginia City ever since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. Love this community and love the people up here. And Sherry does a great job, just super job of getting the change orders into me. And we try to get those things processed as quickly as possible. Ames has done a super job of working with them and getting me the information I need. And Pat, I can't say enough about Pat. He's just great to work with. I like to give him a bad time as much as I can, but, you know, it's like water on the duck's back. It doesn't bother him. But I really appreciate this commission and the opportunity that we have to work with you. Hope to continue to work with you on the water project and other projects you have, and try to get you all the funding we can get. You guys have a great day. Thank you.
Luke and Jim, do you guys have anything from the engineering standpoint that you want to throw in? I've never seen Jen Bashful.
He's hiding the boxing gloves. He'll knock someone out later.
Jen.
Well, absolutely couldn't do it without Jen. A little backstory. This project was my first project at Far West. I think we started as early as 2009 with developing the scope for this project and starting all of the design and research, originally with the Army Corps of Engineers and then now with USDA. It's been definitely, a passion project. I wish every day now I could get up and come watch every pipe go in the ground. Fortunately, I can't, but it's people like Jen that make it possible and help. John mentioned problems. I'd say more challenges. I think our team has avoided it, avoiding these things becoming problems with having Mike on board, on the ground, a great contractor in Ames, really a can-do contractor, and a lot of can-doers, as well as with the funding agency. And the last thing I remember when we rode around in the Tahoe with Kent Evans from USDA, I think it might have been 2014, just as we were wrapping up the wastewater treatment plant project, and Kent was a willing listener and listened to the county talking about your unique community and the unique circumstances that are here, and the response from USDA with the funding that was available is something Far West has never seen, in the state of Nevada, and I really don't know if we'll ever see it again. It was really tremendous. It really fit with the complications and small community that was here to make it to make this project viable for such a small rate base. And now, as we're putting pipe in the ground, I think it's really nice to see it coming together. Construction's going well, and so once again, it's a pleasure to be part of the project as Far West, and we really do feel like a member, team member here in the community, and appreciate the opportunity.
What you said.
And I know there's a man way in the back of the room that would much rather be on a piece of equipment or out chewing somebody's butt for a sign that's not in the right place or a cone that fell down. But again, I got to tell you, and Jim, you don't have to come up if you don't want to. He is the best ambassador of any contractor I've ever worked with, everywhere. And I thank him for coming. Again, he has brought so many additional solutions to us, to an already great design, a great plan. And Jim, I'll give you a pass, but I can't leave you unrecognized. So thank you so much. Thank
Ames. I just want to thank everybody here. I mean, it's one of the best teams and one of the best communities I've ever worked in. And that guy has standing up there at the pulpit. I don't know what to
do.
Thank you, every one of you.
And just so you know, Jim likes it so much he's actually living here.
Yeah, I
know where he lives.
I was just going to make mention of that. You know, it's pretty neat of a project superintendent to move on the Comstock and, you know, run the project from, you know, within here. And he certainly enjoys it here, as I can tell. I'm going to wrap things up unless the commission has any questions of me or anybody else that's assembled here. Jack?
So on the, you know, you had a few water line breakages on B Street. Seems like everything was going pretty smooth until you hit B Street.
Okay, the first slide showed B Street has been a challenge.
So are we replacing water lines as we go along?
In some instances, we have no choice but to do that and to bite the bullet and, you know, that additional cost. It's just because of the condition and, you know, the way that they were installed, that we've got the trench open, it only makes sense to do it and do it right if we can, you know, with the funding that's available. And we've certainly, you know, been upfront with everybody. I mean, it's been some inconveniences, as we well know, but, you know, at times those unfortunate circumstances, you know, raise their ugly head, and you just have to deal with them as they pop up. But overall, once this project is complete, you know, things are going to be much better than they were.
And I kind of want to jump on that too, Jack, because I think that's a great question. First off, all these waterline, not only repairs but enhancements that we're making, are outside the scope of our funding with the USDA. So we're dealing with those, you know, through internal funding sources. And we're appreciative of Ames coming in as close to cost as they possibly can. But the other thing that we're doing, I think there's two important notes here, maybe even three. One is everybody's always quick to point to the most obvious person in the room to say they're responsible. And I got to tell you, we're dealing with pipe that was put in the 60s, I think, some of the crap that's out front here, did we say?
60s. Probably early 70s, 1970s, the stuff on B Street.
You know, it's not contractor caused. You know, it's just outlived its time. What we're doing is we're replacing, not only replacing lines, but more importantly, Jack, I think, you know, for your benefit and everybody who is in town, is we're also adding shutoff valves, diverters. The first break on B Street, I think we were down from Silver clear up to Sutton. And from B, clear up
mill,
to Howard, or okay, we're the mill.
And then all the way up to the top of Stewart's.
We put in three additional diverters. We had, actually, Ames did while the trench was open. Now subsequent ones are much more targeted, you know, and refined. So we're making lemonade out of every lemon we possibly can. And the third thing that Jason W. learned along the way is that NDEP gets a little amped up over fresh water. Go figure. They should. But, you know, they use a phrase called negative pressurization, which I think is NDEP talks from no water. Or a trickle of water. And anytime there's negative pressurization, be it a line break or anything, a leak, a repair, we're going to be going through these boil water orders. And I've mentioned this before. It's what they require. It doesn't mean our water's bad. I'm drinking the water. You know, I had my water shut off. I think I'm looking at Jim probably 3-4 times in the initial part of the, you know, construction down by where I live. And but now you have to issue a boil water order. Jason's team has to draw samples, take it to an independent lab for testing. We got to wait for those results. Then we pull another test and take it to the same lab again for testing. Then we can release the boil water order. I'm not going to tell people not to boil water. That's why we're telling them to. But if you just run the water in your pipeline for a while, you'll probably get about the same result. So.
The other thing I make mention, too, on B Street is not only that existing water and sewer lines that we're dealing with, but there are several old pipes in the ground out here on B. Just at the intersection of Taylor and B, we ran into a total of eight existing steel pipelines that had to be cut out of the way, one of which continued west along Taylor, clear up to the top. There used to be some old wooden tanks up here above Greg and Joyce Hess's place, and they were lines that, you know, fed off of those tanks. One of the 8-inch lines that we think probably was installed about the same vintage after the fire of 75, that 1875, was still full of water. We had to put a connection on that with a valve, and we drained that for several hours before we could even consider cutting that out of the way, knowing what was underground at that location as well. And we've encountered those up and down the B Street corridor. You know, B Street used to be, of course, the main street in town back in the day. So it's just the extra amount of time that's involved, because we can't take an excavator and start hammering on this pipe, you know, because it creates issues in other areas that we want to avoid. So, like John made mention of, we got historic artifacts. And they consider that pipe and such, you know, to be a historic artifact as well. So, you know, we photograph stuff. The archaeological folks are there. So it's well documented. The other thing I'll make mention of is Ames has on site, Jim is one of those folks that does on-site surveying through GPS unit. We're marking everything as we go, everything that we find, project-related or not, so they can eventually prepare a nice as-built drawings and plans on digital format for the entire new system and the old system as we run into it and encounter it. So that'll be very helpful in the future. Yeah. So just fantastic. Anybody else have any additional questions? Hopefully we answered your question.
Yeah, that was great.
Commissioner McGuffey.
No, Mike, thanks for the updated presentation. It's terrific. And I'd like to thank everyone who's been part of this project, lady and gentlemen, for coming up today. We appreciate it. I mean, this is Virginia City's probably the most major public works project in modern history, probably in the last 100 years. Because as the original system was put in, it was put in piecemeal as, you know, as it went on. And so it's been a few disruptions for some of the neighborhoods, mostly with just dust and blocking streets. But going forward, having a lot fewer calls for having plugged sewers around the community is going to be well worth it. I can speak from experience on Howard Street. So,
exactly.
Mike, once again, thank you. And thanks, everyone, for attending today. It's great.
I'd like to let Jim, you know that now he's free to go. And as he calls him, he's got to go and watch after his kids. And they're the guys that are doing the work. So, again, thank you all.
Great. Thank you, Mike. All right, we're going to go ahead and continue on now with our committee and staff reports, and I'll start with the right side of the building with Sheriff Antonoro.
Just a few quick things. Let you know, I've got two deputies graduating from Post Academy tomorrow. So we'll be happy to get them back. Mostly they had completed their training, their field training, before they left. So it shouldn't take them long to get back up to speed. I think we might give them a couple hours off before we put them back to work. But should start seeing their faces again next week. So, Chris Parker and David Ranson. The incinerator that the state gave us that I brought up a number of months ago now. And we were kind of holding off because of one of the businesses who had come in and done a presentation. We were hoping to get something going with them that never materialized, so we've moved forward with the incinerator project. That concrete just poured the pad for it to sit on down at the substation, so hopefully that'll be up and running. We're going to work with the GID down there, Canyon GID, on the installation of a feeder pipe for the propane, since they need some at their building out behind, so we've already been in conversation about that. So any costs associated with that, all our associated costs are going to the state. They paid for the concrete pad, they're paying for the incinerator, everything. And then whatever's left on that pipeline hopefully is going to be absorbed by the GID, since our portion is paid for by the state. But we should have that incinerator hopefully going in just the very near future. Judge was here. I don't know if she still is. But we're ready to move on her video arraignment system. We've got all the stuff in place at the jail waiting on that. So just when the folks come and start plugging in the equipment, we should be good to go. And then the last thing I have just... recently came up, and just a word for everybody, be careful when you get those phone calls that claim to be friends, relatives, or whatever. We just had another one yesterday here in Virginia City where they called professing to be a grandchild who had just been in a car accident. That's why they sounded funny. They needed money. It always goes around. It seems to be kind of cyclical, and looks like we're back on the upswing again. So be careful with those callers. Don't give out any information over the phone, and verify who it is you're talking to. So, any questions?
Yep. Thanks, Sheriff. Right. Over to the community chest from the library. Eric Shum.
Good morning. For the record, Eric Shum with Community Chest and Story County Library. Two things. The first is joyous. We will have our open house, grand opening on June 1st, which is the card that you are receiving as it's getting passed down. On Friday, June 1st, from 5 to 7, we'll have wine and cheese, we'll have root beer floats. We are quickly, efficiently, diligently working on cleaning the place. It'll be spick and span, and the books will be moved in the library. Hopefully the tech center will be up. I think it'll be something everybody will be proud of. We'll have a short program. We'd love to see all of you there. Everybody is invited. So anyway, just wanted to let you know about that. And then number two, Sherry asked if I would speak with you about an interesting report that came out. And I think it's along these lines. There's times when you're living and working in a place where something surprises you, and it doesn't appear to be what it seems, and this is one of those cases. There was a report that identified Story County's high risk for the opioid crisis, and that didn't ring true for my experience in Story County. And I reached out to Sherry and I reached out to others to find out if it was their experience, and no, it wasn't their experience that Story County would have been chosen as one of two counties in Nevada as high risk for this designation. So nationally, they rated these different communities as high risk based on a number of different indicators. And in Nevada, Esmeralda and Story counties were the two counties that were at the top of the list for high risk, which was a head scratcher. So looking at the data further, it looks like it's an artifact of the data. First of all, there are some indicators in there that just don't really apply to us, the number of medical providers we might have in the county, because the medical providers are easily accessible, hospitals are easily accessible outside of the county. We don't necessarily need to have one in the county. As well, we also have a zip code issue where a lot of the data that would otherwise be included for Story County goes to other counties. So you end up with 89440 only data. And last but not least, there are indicators where they take the averages of the numbers in neighboring counties to arrive at an estimation for Story County. So it makes sense to me that Lyon County, Washoe County, and Carson City County would all be high risk. If that's true, and you boil those numbers together, I imagine that would elevate the Story County's risk. So in looking at these numbers, it looked like an artifact of the data. We ran that up the flagpole to the state folks who look at this data, and they also concurred that it looks like an artifact of the data. So if for some reason you hear that Story County has been identified as a high-risk county, per the way they ran these numbers and designed the study, yes, but it doesn't appear that that's connected to what we're seeing as service providers. So just wanted you guys, you all to have information. I can provide you the study if you want to look at it. Warning, it's very wordy and kind of policy wonky, but if you'd like a copy of it, I can give it to you, but that's essentially what's happening with that report. Any questions on that?
No, actually, I received that, too, and I thought it was bogus.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Eric.
Great, thanks, Eric.
All right. Our director at the Senior Citizen Center, Stacy Gilder.
Not today,
thank you. Nothing. We have our director at St. Mary's Heart Center, Ms. Perry.
Nothing today.
Nothing today? Okay. We move along to our project coordinator for flood repair and courthouse roof and all kinds of associated items. Mike Northam.
Good morning, commissioners. Mike Northam for the record. A few items for you today. The courthouse roof was at substantial completion 2 weeks ago. Last Friday, the roofers came back and installed the parapet cap along the front parapet wall, and they also installed permanent chimney caps on the rebuilt historic chimneys, bringing this to 100% completion. We did have a few rain events over the last several days, and not one observed leak, so I'm happy to report that. The wall in the recorder's office continues to dry out. We've been taking moisture samples about every other day from that flue area there, the old fireplace. So we're happy to report there's no additional water getting in there. It's at this point just slightly above ambient, and it continues to dry. We are running a dehumidifier 24 hours a day up in the attic directed there. That will be taken out here pretty soon. We do expect to get some proposed scopes of work for the repair in that recorder's office and also this bit of wall right here. So we'll know a bit more about the proposed remediation efforts in the next week. Station 72, job walks have started out there. The project manager and I walked that job site yesterday. There'll be a bunch more subs coming through in the next day or so. The work out there is generally limited to gypboard paint. Gypboard painting and flooring. There's some carpet, some stuff out there. Hope to see that closed up as quick as possible, so I'll be following that closely and advising. Work is expected in the DA's office this weekend. I'll be talking to office personnel and getting them all squared away and ready for that. This weekend will involve the gypboard patching, taping, texturing, and then the following weekend we expect the paint crew to be in there. That same paint crew will be doing, following that work in there, that same paint crew will be doing a little bit of touch-up in the clerk's office, a little bit of touch-up in community development, the break room here in the courthouse, and also at Station 71. Here in the chambers, work is proceeding. In fact, the guys are in there right now working on chambers 2, which is the second room over here, installing the plaster ceiling. We had our lath inspection yesterday. They immediately put up their what they call the scratch coat. Today they're doing an intermediate coat. There'll be a day in between for that to cure, and then there's a skim coat that goes on. Of course, following that, we'll be painting the ceilings. The wallpaper will be installed, and then professional carpet cleaning, closing this out. The Lockwood Senior Center is complete, so they tell me. I'll be walking that job later today, visiting with personnel there, and getting that closed out. If there's any punch list items, I'll be pushing forward on those. I'm also going to be calling for the removal of the mobile office unit that's out front here, the temporary thing. I'm going to try and schedule that for removal by about mid-June. The reason I'm waiting and keeping it around till then is that I've taken some of the furniture out of the judge's chambers here because it's ancient and irreplaceable stuff, and so I moved it over there to store it, to keep it out of harm's way while we have all this plaster work, which is notoriously messy, and the paint work. Last item is the roof on Station 71 is still scheduled to be starting May 21st. So you can expect crew on Station 71 getting a proper roof put back on that facility. Any questions, sir?
Thank you, Mike.
Great. Thanks for the update. Terrific. All right. How about the director of the VCTC, Denny Donson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll echo your sentiments or comments made earlier about the wastewater project. I was at a tourism conference for the regional tourism meeting last week, and given an update. And one of the questions was, "Hey, what's going on in BC with all this construction?" And I said, "Well, you know, got this big wastewater project, and our goal was to once it all gets done and the improvements are all in place, is to officially retire some of these outhouses you see running up and down the street in October." So, got a little chuckle, but it was cool. People are paying attention to what we're doing. They know we're doing some neat upgrades up here. So we're looking forward to having some additional parking and some of the nice paved streets for sure as we welcome visitors for the summer, which we are getting ready to do at full swing. A lot of the attractions are opening now. I think our last one will be the train at the end of the month. But the VCTC and the visitor center and the attractions are working on opening up a full swing, which starting this weekend is with the weekends is about 5 straight weekends of major events. We'll be closing the street for Chile, Union to Sutton. That'll be closed, hard closure for 2 days. Then from there, we just continue to go on into Memorial Day weekend with the parade and the train. You have the RTO, Reno Tahoe Odyssey, 3,500 runners, followed up with the Street Vibrations Run on that one Saturday. Goes right into Taste of the Comstock. And then a new event, the Cowgirl Saloon Crawl and Wine Dancing Competition in the street. So something unique and new, but we're looking forward to that. It'll be a good little run to start the year off, officially for summer. With that, we also have seen congestion, obviously, with the special events. We see it all the time, but now with the construction, it's been more of a focus on where to park and where not to park. Some of the signage definitely needs to be upgraded. We have a subcommittee that's in place with the fire department, sheriff, planning that we are working on coming up with a recommendation for the commission here on what we would like to do. A lot of it is just replacing or putting in new signs to help with the confusion of where to park. We met with a developer yesterday. I mentioned earlier about a mobile app that Virginia City has had for some years. We just upgraded it. It's available now. In about 2 weeks, we'll put our first wave of beacons out on C Street. So those folks that have their app open or actually downloaded, they'll be walking. They'll be get push notifications and able to listen to historic buildings, listen to a message about a historic building, get a push message notification on what the hot buy is for this weekend at the Red Dog or museum or what have you. So it really opens up to a new way of marketing. We're excited about that. But it'll happen. We've actually bought 100 beacons that we'll look to install, about a dozen every month or so. It takes a little bit of programming, so we'll be following up on that with you guys. And then just a FYI on Pipers, our rebranding efforts are coming progressing very nicely, and we have some nice new collateral out there. We have a new website that is out, is launched with an event calendar. I urge you to check it out. We actually had to purchase. There was some confusion on the URL, but we purchased that. So now we own PipersOperaHouse.com. So that makes sense, and that's the one we wanted. And it's branded, and it's a neat website, very interactive. You can download the events into your own personal calendar, and you can do a lot of neat things on it that you'll see as well in the Virginia City Tourism website once that launches here soon, hopefully. So, that's all I've got.
Any questions for Dave? Okay, great. Okay. Thank you, Dave. Well, now we have Fire Marshal Martin Azevedo.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, Martin Azevedo, Stark County Fire Marshal. Things are going pretty steady at community development. Things are going well. We got lots of plans coming in. We're getting them put out, lots of projects. Upgrading or coming into the area or starting in the area and just working away at it, doing really well. I'd like to mention our staff at Community Development, fantastic staff. I was with the state for 20 years, almost 20 years, and the staff that we have over there is phenomenal. Good staff, probably one of the best ones I've worked with. And on that note, I would like to call up Fire Prevention Officer Patty Blakely, please. I'm going to read something to you, gentlemen, which I'm very proud to present. On February 28th, Quincy, Massachusetts, Patty Blakely, Story County Community Development, has been selected by the National Fire Protection Association, short NFPA, to receive a Star Scholarship Award for her dedication and effectively reaching out to the public for fire and life safety education. As an award recipient, Patty will attend NFPA's conference and expo in Las Vegas in June, where she will participate in training and conference events and networking. Patty has consistently demonstrated a strong commitment to reducing Story County residents' risk to fire and related hazards, said Jeff Donahue, the Regional Education Specialist for NFPA Public Education Division. And she is truly deserving of this award. NFPA only hands out 12 scholarships around the United States and Canada for this, 12. And Patty received one of these scholarships. I can say personally and professionally, over the last 20 years working for the state, and the last 12 to 13 years of working with Patty, I know that she really concentrates on the kids in the schools with fire prevention, with the community when it comes to wildfire awareness, which she's going to be presenting something to you later on. And I know she's really involved in that. So I just wanted to let everybody know this and yourselves. This is a great award to her, and not a lot of people get it. I haven't even gotten one. So, congratulations, Patty.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anything you'd like to say?
Thank you.
That's all I have. Any questions? No questions.
Okay. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you, Martin.
Next up, our Emergency Management Director, Joe Curtis.
Good morning, members of the Commission. Joe Curtis for the record. Just two or three items I wanted to bring to your attention. Last week, Information Technology Director James Dean and I attended a two-day conference and training program on cybersecurity. My initial thoughts was this is going to be way over my head, but it turned out to be a very effective situation. And as you know, that's a big point these days, cybersecurity, and is actually Nevada's Homeland Security's number one concern for
terrorism and other types of activity that Homeland Security is concerned with. It's the number one on their list of about five or more items that they're concerned with. So it becomes a big thing with us as well. Our information technology for the county is vital to our day-to-day operations, and we need to start directing some attention in terms of emergency management as well in that realm. So James and I we attended this together. Participated in several exercises within that training. And we're looking at putting together a small group of working people as a working task force, if you will, to address cybersecurity, not only in county government, but directed towards our citizenry in the county, to help them understand a little bit more about what cybersecurity is in their private realm, the computers that they have in their home. So we'll probably be looking at some marketing type of things to go out, maybe in the, we may attach them to the weather alerts, or we may attach the notes to the What If newsletter or What If Times newsletter that I've done in the past. We may start addressing some of cybersecurity factors for that. So it's a big thing, and we're going to start chasing cybersecurity here. The next item is that, as you know, we have several emergency operations plans within the county to direct and identify specific aspects of emergency dealings in the county of natural and man-made disasters. One of them is an evacuation plan for the entire county. We have an evacuation plan that we've had in place for a number of years. We'll be working with the state here shortly on revamping their plan that they have as it relates to Story County. And we've also just made a contract with an organization called E&E, Environmental and Ecology, that we've used and that the state has used on a number of occasions to upgrade revamp our emergency operations plan for the entire county, which we have to do every 5 years just to make sure it's up to date. And with that thoughts in mind, we're going to be directing a lot to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Complex, because that is a major factor within the county these days. And the nature of the industrial complex is such that there's concerns that we need to look at and address and make sure that we address those factors to ensure the safety and future protection of our major asset in the community, in the county. So with that, any questions particularly along that line?
No.
No? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Over at Community Relations, Sherry Nevin. Our Public Works Director, Jason Wersbecki. All right. Over the Planning Department, Kathy Canfield.
Nothing
today. Fire Chief, Jeff Nevin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, nothing at this time.
Director of Planning and Human Resources, Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioners. Some folks in the public out in the Highlands were asking what type of cell service will be provided by the monopine out there by AT&T. AT&T has informed us that it will be broadband service and 4 or 5G wireless cellular service. We expect that to start happening about this summer. As far as installation, should be around October when it becomes live. That's it. Thank you.
Wow, great. So we're getting it, finally. District Attorney Langer?
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
County Manager, Mr. Whitten.
Excuse me, I had to call in NDA. I apologize. Three quick things for those of that are not doing anything tomorrow at 10:30. This is a red letter day. A company that we have been working on and with for over a decade, close to two decades, they have bought land, changed their plan, needed more room, bought more land, but tomorrow Fulcrum Bioenergies breaks ground on their refinery. It'll be a big day. So if you can make it 10:30, we encourage everybody. Next off, and I hope at one of the two meetings in June to be able to get this before you, we're going to go ahead in the interest of keeping things moving forward with our Justice Court relocation. We have come to the determination that we are going to build down at the jail site. As I mentioned, it'll be subject to your award and your bidding here hopefully in June. We won't be awarding, but we'll be getting ready to go out to bid. But we're going to build probably a 3,500 square foot Justice Court and then do tenant improvements to it that the judge has been working on. But the price right now on construction per square foot, again, is coming in at contractor's estimate. These are not bids because we have not gone out to bid yet, but they're coming in very low. So we hope to be able to build added shell space, if you will, probably another 6,000 square feet that eventually we might look at combining other functions down there as well. So that's kind of the tentative plan. Right now we're looking at shell only, which I think is a screaming good price, and I verified this with Commissioner McGuffey on behalf of Collins Construction, who he works for. I think we're in at about $122 a square foot for just shell.
So yeah, you know, for custom homes, it's running $200, $225, so that's a heck of a deal.
Now, let's just hope we can get a bid at that. So, and again, that's just the shell, I want to stress. And last on the list, I kind of want to, I guess, put a rumor, kill it. Working with our tourism director, who is responsible at my direction for packaging the special events and going ahead and approving them, working with them, such as the motorcycle race, the Grand Prix that we just had, the chili cook-off, all those. Annually, we have one problem event, it seems like. It just doesn't yield enough, in our opinions, enough return to justify both the expenses. And then we had some public safety issues as well, particularly with our fire and EMS team. And that is the Ferrari Hill climb. I think last week's paper had an article run, you know, where they're really trying to gin it up. There's a school bus that apparently was donated that no one knew about, that I'm working with Todd to make sure. But I will tell you that as we sit here today, there will be no Ferrari Hill climb. I've overridden Denny, as is provided for in our ordinance, probably 3 years in a row. This year, I made a determination, and we've worked with the event organizers trying to get them to better understand how they might have people notice that their people are spending money in town. Doesn't matter if they're spending money in the bars, the shops, the restaurants, I don't care where, you know, not just staying down in Carson City, coming up to race on race day and then going back down to Carson City or wherever they're staying. So at this stage, there will be no Ferrari Hill climb, and I'm going to tell you I'm not losing any sleep over it because I think Denny's capable of going out this pub crawl and line dance. You know, I think is further proof we can have an event that's impactful in a good way and replace, you know, the ones that we've struggled with over the years. So there will be no Ferrari Hill climb as is provided for anywhere. That's it.
Great.
And again, I apologize for stepping out.
No, it's perfect timing, though. Okay, that's right. Any questions for Pat?
No.
None? Okay, clerk? Nothing today, Vanessa? Okay. No, thank you.
Are you in your new office?
You're at home.
You're home. Okay.
Do you want to talk about the NDA or anything like that? Okay.
You got Hugh at the front. Hugh at the front.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Out of sight was out of mind. Sorry, Mr. Gallagher. from the comptroller's office, Mr. Gallagher.
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
happy about that. That concludes item number 5. We'll move on to item number 6 now, which is the board comments, which will take no action of public comment. We'll start down to the far end of the table. Commissioner Gilman.
Yes, sir. I just want to share that I was extended a nice invitation to fly back to Washington, D.C. for a conference and spend some time with our leadership back there. And unfortunately, I am not going to be able to attend and do that. But I understand that Bum Hess, who is our lobbyist, will be going back and he'll be attending on behalf of Story County. So I'm sorry I can't go, but there are pressing things here. Story County.
What issues are they going to be addressing?
They'll be addressing the ozone issue that we've all been working on here recently, and with the Treasury. They'll also be working through perhaps some opportunities in the zip code program that we've all been doing, and an opportunity, an idea that may present itself, among other things.
Thank you, Lance.
Okay.
You're welcome. Commissioner McGuffey.
Well, of course, this last weekend is Mother's Day weekend, so I took the Mother's Day V&T railway train. It was very well organized. It was sold out Sunday. I think they only had maybe 8 seats left Saturday, something like that. So it was, and then when you got off the train, they had roses for the mothers, and I passed out train whistles to all the kids. So it was a pretty fun event. Like I said, it was well coordinated, pretty smooth running. So my hat's off to the new general manager, which is Elaine Barkdahl, and Joel Dunn from Carson. He's the one who printed up the tickets at the last minute, and they look like quality tickets. Everybody jumped on board to make this train run. We spent the prior weekend out there cleaning up all the trash, so everything looked good. So my hat's off to that, and hopefully ticket sales were way up, so we're hoping that this is the start of a good thing, and I mean, we're pretty positive about that. Next week I'll be leaving for Idaho for the NACO Western Regional Conference. Primary issues that are abound there, other than, you know, they also have training that I'll be taking advantage of, is that they're going to be discussing the lands bill that's kind of been hung up in Congress, and also the interstate sage-grouse protection issues that's going on. That's it. Then I'll be back.
Thanks, Jack. I'm glad to see you're going to go to the Western Regional Conference this year. I don't think anyone on the board has attended since Bob Kershaw was a commissioner. And timing is everything, and everybody's got a pretty busy schedule, so I'm glad you're finding the time to do this. Longtime county assessor Maggie Lothar has always encouraged us to attend this because she found it to be very informative and educating. So thanks for finding the time to do it, Jack.
Thank you.
Okay, so speaking of trips to Washington, County Manager Pat Whitman and myself, we made a quick trip to Washington last Wednesday to return here on Thursday. So we didn't have too much rest there, but we did. We had some action-packed meetings. We met with Congressman Amade. We met with staff, Drew Berry of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, which is overseeing the postal reform bill, which has our zip code issue involved in that. We met with Andrew Williams, who is a staff of Senator Heller. We were scheduled to meet with the senator, but he was giving a speech on the Senate floor having to do with the Yucca Mountain bill that they were voting on. We later met with Senator Cortez Masto and her staff, Kyle Chapman and Bridget Keller. And our conversations were on all three subjects that have been mentioned. Our zip code, which they know is extremely important to us. The lands bill, which they're looking for a technical fix. And the ozone that Commissioner Gilman had mentioned already. The postal bill is the one that we've been working on probably the longest, long before my involvement here, but it's been the top of my subject list for the last 6 years. This is the second Congress that this bill's been introduced. It got right down to the finish line in the last Congress when Senator Carper out of Delaware had put the kibosh on it, only willing to find out its benefit at the hour that was too late. They didn't have time to vote on it, so it died in the last Congress. So we're there again and pushing hard, and it's hard to get these bills on a standalone vote in Congress. So they're looking to the postal reform bill is still there, and it's attached to that, but there's still this Medicare component, which some of the senators have an issue with it for the funding. Although our bill doesn't require any funding, they're looking to find any must-pass bill that they can attach this to. So if there's any continuing resolution bill that's going to go through or defense spending or something that's going to have to pass, they want to attach it to that. So they're working diligently, and we're working with our team in Washington, which is the Porter Group, which is retired Congressman John Porter out of the Southern Nevada and his staff, Dan Maurer. They do a fabulous job for us, and they're the ones who coordinate these meetings so that we can see all of our representatives in one day in a nice time frame so that we can get in and get out of there. For those of you that think that can be handled over the telephone or in writing by email, it just won't happen. We've been always encouraged that you have to go to Washington, you have to meet with your representatives in person, and this goes back several years ago, even no matter what your political affiliation is or leanings. Senator Reid always told us, if you want to get anything done, you're going to have to come to Washington to get it done. So that's what we did last week, and we're pushing forward. There's no reason why all three of these shouldn't come to fruition for us. So anyway, that's my report on our fun travels of last week. We'll go ahead and move along now to item number 7. This is discussion of possible action. Approved Story County Proclamation in support of Nevada Wildlife Awareness Month, May 2018. Patty, who's going to go ahead and are you going to handle this, Patty?
You want to start? No. Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, Patty Blakely, Story County Community Development Fire Prevention Officer. Mr. Chairman, we would like to request approval for the Story County Proclamation in support of Nevada Wildfire Awareness Month, May 2018. Also, we'd like to remind everyone that wildfire can threaten communities any time of the year. Some examples are that have fires that have occurred throughout the year are the Washoe Drive Fire in Pleasant Washoe Valley, where 29 homes were lost in 2012, and that occurred in January. The Halen Fire in Spring Creek, which threatened 20 homes in 2012, that occurred in April. And the Carpenter Fire in Mount Charleston, which threatened 400 homes in 2013, that occurred in July. And the Collin Fire in Reno, where 29 homes were lost in 2011, occurred in November. So in response, local, state, and federal firefighting agencies and the University of Cooperative Extension have conducted a wildfire awareness campaign since 2006. This year's message is prepare now while wildfire knows no season. So some tips to help your round include in the winter to update your home inventory, and prepare a family evacuation plan. And some in spring, begin working on your defensible space cleanup and prepare and practice your family evacuation. In summer, maintain your defensible space and register your cell and home phone with the local emergency response system or reverse 911. And in the fall, clean up areas on your property where leaves pile up, because that tends to be the areas where the embers will too during wildfire. And also clean out your rain gutters. So during the month of May and all year long, we encourage you to prepare now, because wildfire knows no season. And we would like to know if you would accept the proclamation, and Jerry is going to read that if you'd like.
Great. My recollection, this is an annual thing that we
yes.
Is that right?
Yes, correct.
It is. Okay.
Good morning, everyone. I'm for the record, I'm Joseph Starnes, Community Development, Fire Prevention Officer, and Nuisance Officer. So Story County Proclamation in support of Nevada Wildfire Awareness Month, May 2018. Whereas wildfire significantly impacts Nevada's environment, economic, and social well-being, and whereas residents of Nevada's fire-prone communities need to accept responsibility for living in high fire hazard areas, and whereas residents must prepare to survive wildfire by ensuring proper management of vegetation surrounding the home and appropriate home construction and maintenance to resist ignition, and whereas wildfires can occur during any month, and whereas residents must stay continuously vigilant and prepare for wildfire throughout the year. Therefore, be it proclaimed that Story County Board of County Commissioners supports the month of May 2018 as Nevada Wildfire Awareness Month, and this year's theme, Prepare Now, Wildfire Knows No Season, as a means for education and a call for residents of Story County to take action now to reduce the wildfire threat and prepare their homes, families, and community for wildfire and stay prepared throughout the year. Passed, approved, adopted this 15th day of May 2015.
Thank you, Joseph. All right, this is an action item. So is there any public comment regarding this?
Yes, ma'am.
Proclamation?
Yes.
You got anything?
No. 2018.
Yes, sir. I thought you said 15.
That's right. No public comment? Very good. Thank you, Martin, Patty, Joseph. Coming up. And if we can go ahead and get a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the Story County Proclamation in support of Nevada Wildfire Awareness Month, May 2018.
Second your motion.
Very good. I have a motion and a second to approve this proclamation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Moving along now to item number 8. This is discussion and possible action. Approval of the contract with Far West Engineering for design and construction administration for the 6 Mile Canyon Drainage Improvement Project, and authorization for county manager to sign all associated documentation. Proposed cost of the agreement, $214,500. Ms. Nevis.
Thank you, Commissioner McBride. Sharon Edden for the record. Story County requested Far West Engineering to submit an engineering scope of work and fee proposal for the design and construction administration of the replacement of culverts, some shoulder widening, and guardrail installation at select locations along 6 Mile Canyon Road. Over the last several years, the road has been closed for roadway and culvert repairs due to flood events. The biggest one happened last January 2017 when we experienced significant flooding, which we haven't seen anything of that magnitude in quite a few years. We had widespread damage due to stormwater flow, was evident at several locations along the road. One of those culverts completely washed out just due to insufficient capacity of all that water coming down the road. The shoulder and embankments along that area were eroded. So the county completed the emergency repairs in an effort to attempt to restore the shoulders, but were unable to restore the shoulder width and embankment slopes to pre-storm conditions. As you'll recall, the road was closed for several months while we did that. The county, in cooperation with NDOT, actually we were approached by NDOT, since this road is considered a major collector onto two of their state routes, that we were eligible to receive Federal Highway Works Administration funding to support both the emergency repairs and then the permanent repairs. So we worked with them. I think we came to you guys last year and kind of briefed you on that. We were successful in receiving, that's kind of a loose term I'm using here, funding for $1.2 million to make repairs and upgrades to selected existing stormwater infrastructure, including restoration of shoulders due to erosion caused by the storm event. The one caveat here is the county is required to expend all this money up front and then be reimbursed by the federal highway. Now, as you know, we're competing with a lot of other disasters that went on throughout the country last year. We were the only county in the state that was awarded funding through FHWA. Washoe County has submitted a package, and that was denied. So it's basically our project here in Story County and then other select projects that NDOT had. For instance, Cave Rock was one, Kingsbury Grade, I think Pyramid Highway, all those different the state routes that were damaged. So before we can move forward with anything, we have to have design done. So what we're presenting to you today is Far West Engineering for them to coordinate the proposed work with FHWA through NDOT to ensure the design and construction efforts are eligible for federal participation for a total contracted amount of $214,500. This contract will allow us to achieve full project design and bidding assistance, as well as construction administration. This particular project, we have a 5% match for it. 95% is federal money, 5% is county. So that's a pretty good match if you look at some of these grants. There's maybe 60-40, 50-50, only 5% with this. But like I say, the only caveat is we don't know how long it's going to take us to get our money back. And we can't really get a gauge on that. No one has been able to give us a hard, fast estimate that 2019, when we finish the project, we'll have our money. We don't know. But you hate to turn down an upwards of $1 million in federal funds. So that's where we're at currently with this.
But it is noted that there is a reimbursement.
Yes, and you have that letter in your packet right from the Federal Highways Administration, basically spelling out those different projects here in the state that are guaranteed to be reimbursed.
And if I may, Sherry's done a great job in presenting this to me and as has Jason and Far West. You know, this is unique. I mean, you know, we're not used to working with any agency that says, well, when you're all done and you spend all this money, we'll probably pay, you know.
We're pretty sure the word probably.
Yeah. But when the day's done, I think our determining factor really was, this is work we got to do anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's not nice to have work. This is work we've got to do. 6 miles invaluable to our school kids. It just is an invaluable road, period. So that's why we decided, let's go ahead and, you know, take advantage of the eligibility that we have, and we'll continue through Far West and others to package it in a way that we'll receive reimbursement when the time's due.
Plus, Sherry's office has a reputation of doing everything correctly when it comes to these types of grants and that, or loans, whatever's necessary there. So, yeah, I'm confident that we'll be reimbursed for the project.
This is a learning project for all of us, and even folks at NDOT. There's been a lot of retirements at NDOT and people who've never worked with this particular source of funding, which we don't get disasters in the state like we did last year, so we don't really have a lot of chances to be eligible for these sorts of funding. So we're learning. So with your approval today, we will meet with NDOT next week for a project kickoff meeting. That'll be various folks from NDOT, the three of us here, folks from Federal Highways, to kind of begin moving forward. So if everything goes as planned, kind of the schedule, and you'll see that in your packet here, we're hoping to have everything substantially completed by September of 2019. And NDOT has asked us why. Why is it going to take you that long? Well, number one, we have an environmental report out there that there's a nesting bird in that area. We've got to work around that. And then we don't want to interrupt the school buses utilizing that roadway. So try to work during the summer months and minimize those impacts, as well as, you know, to the public that uses that. It's a very heavily traveled road if you look at the traffic studies. So.
Yeah, or just drive it yourself.
Yeah.
All right. Does anybody have any public comment regarding this contract with Far West Engineering? Commissioners, have any more questions? Okay. I get a motion to approve the contract with Far West.
I'll move to approve a contract with Far West Engineering for design and construction administration for the Six Mile Canyon Drainage Improvement Project and authorize the county manager to sign all associated documentation.
Okay. A motion?
Second.
I've got a motion and a second to approve the contract with Far West Engineering. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we're going to move on to item number 9. This is discussion of possible action. Approve appointment of A. Perry with St. Mary's Art Center to the vacant motel seat on the Virginia City Tourism Commission, effective May the 15th, 2018. Mr. Dotson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Denny Dotson.
And we'll also make note that the applicant is in the audience today.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for being here today, Ms. Curry.
Yes, sir. Per NRS, the Virginia City Tourism Commission's advisory board is made up of 5 members. There is a representative from the business district, would be Angelo Petrini. There is an at-large position, our chairman, Ron Gallagher. There's representation from the county commission, Mr. Gilman. We have a hotel operators, and that position is filled by Corrado De Gasperis from the Gold Hill Hotel. With that, we have an open position that was vacated by Pam Abercrombie last year. We did advertise that. We didn't have any applicants at that time. We re-advertised it this year, and while we only got one applicant, I am very pleased with the choice that we have. I think that the applicant brings a diversity that we have not had on the board for some time in regards to the arts and the culture that we display here in Virginia City. So with that, staff would recommend that A. Perry be appointed to the open motel position on the VCTC board.
All right. Thanks, Denny. Is there any public comment regarding this appointment? Do the commissioners want to question the applicant?
Just give her the third degree.
Give her the third degree. It'd be a wonderful addition.
All right.
Looking forward to rejoining the board.
Yes, she will. She'll be terrific. All right. With that said, if I can go ahead and ask for a motion.
I'll gladly make a motion to approve the appointment of A. Perry to the Virginia City Tourism Commission's motel seat.
Second to motion.
I move to second to approve this appointment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the commission.
Thank you.
Yep.
Moving along to item number 10, discussion of possible action. Approval and acceptance of Interior Historic Preservation Grant, matching grant in aid award for $6,998.50 to assist in attendance at the 2018 National Association of Preservation Commission Forum Conference.
I guess I'll take this one, Mr. Chairman. I didn't know I was going to.
Oh, just sorry.
Looks like she disappeared.
Okay.
Maybe Jeff can grab her. She's.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're up.
Okay. What's going on now?
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Okay, so next up we have a grant that we have been awarded from State Historic Preservation Office. We applied for this grant back at the beginning of the year through the United States Department of Interior. It's a historic preservation matching grant and aid award. for $6,998.50 to assist the county in sending five individuals to the 2018 National Association of Preservation Commission Forum Conference in Des Moines, Iowa. There is a required match for this grant, 40%. We have it budgeted in our community relations budget. That will be for $3,780. We may not use that whole amount. But that will allow us to, like I said, send five folks to this historic preservation conference. They hold it every other year. We went back in 2016, and it proved to be pretty invaluable in just giving us some tools and techniques to deal with historic preservation here on the Comstock. So we have three folks that have committed, two from the Comstock Historic District Commission as well. So should be a fairly good group, and like I say, they pay for a majority of this. The state receives funds to do that. So it's usually Story County attends, City of Reno, Carson City, Las Vegas. So there's good representation from Nevada, good networking opportunities.
So is there a total of five, including Comstock Historic Commission
yes.
District?
Okay. Yes, yeah. Total of five.
Okay.
So, yeah. That includes actually three of their commission members. So.
Yeah. I think only two are going to attend.
Yes.
Because Bert has another event, I think he has to go to.
He's actually presenting at this conference.
He's presenting. Okay, then there will be three there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Karen going.
Karen DeFore, Joe and Curtis.
Joe. Yeah.
Myself and Laura Mather from
okay, Lake good.
Lake School.
Good, yeah. I'd like to go, but we're tied up that much.
Yeah, it's a busy. It's right smack in the middle of July, so yeah. It'll be just a bit.
And we've got National NACO.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Okay. All right. Since we're going to go ahead and allocate some funds, is there any public comment regarding this item on the agenda? Hearing none, if I can go ahead and get a motion to approve.
Yeah. I'll move to approve and accept the United States Department of Interior Historic Preservation Grant, HPF, matching grant and aid award for $6,998.50 to assist in the attendance at the 2018 National Association of Preservation Commission Forum Conference and authorizations for Sherry Nevin to sign all associated grant documentation.
Very good.
I'll second your motion.
Moved and second to approve this grant, this matching grant. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Mm-hmm. Okay, at this time we're going to go ahead. This is item 11. We're going to recess the Story County Board of Commissioners and convene as the Story County Liquor License Board. We'll have Sheriff Antonoro join us. Next up is item number 12, discussion and possible action, approval of the second reading to add on sale to the Virginia City RV Park LLC at 355 North F Street, Virginia City, Nevada, 89440. Sheriff Antonoro.
As indicated by the agenda item, this is just an addition to the license we approved just recently. They've gone through all the background process. No reason that they should be denied. If anybody's not been over to their establishment yet, I would recommend that I've been over there a few times, and they're doing a real nice service. This should complement their business very well.
Yep. I'm getting a lot of compliments on how they've upgraded the park down there. Okay. Is there any public comment regarding the approval of the second reading for this liquor license? Hearing none, I can get a motion to approve.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve the second reading for the amendment to two existing liquor license, adding on-sale liquor license to the Virginia City RV Park LLC, run by Carol Malley, at 335 North F Street, Virginia City, Nevada, 89440.
Okay.
Second your motion.
We move in a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Thank you, Sheriff. At this time, we're going to adjourn as the Story County Liquor Board and reconvene as the Story County Board of County Commissioners. Next up on our list is going to be item number 14. And this is a discussion of possible action.
So that note, I had us reconvene as Story County Board of County Commissioners. We're going to convene as the Story County 474 Fire Protection District Board. Quick correction there. And we'll bring on item number 14, discussion of possible action. Action to approve the Story County Fire Protection District 2008 operating plan between the USDA, Forest Service Humboldt-Tioga National Forest, and the USDI Bureau of Land Management, Tri-State District.
That would be 2018. You said 2008.
2018. Is it USDI? Is that correct?
Yeah, Department of Interior.
Okay, very good. All right, Chief Nevin.
All right, for the record, Jeff Nevin, Story County Fire Chief. Again, as the chairman stated, this is a action to possibly approve the 2018 operating plan between the Forest Service, the Humboldt-Tioga National Forest, and the Bureau of Land Management, Carson City District. This is an annual operating plan. You saw pretty much the same one last year. This gives us the ability to bill and call for mutual aid and go on mutual aid both in-state and out-of-state. So this is just the avenue to follow with that. So if there's any questions, I can answer those.
Okay. You're going to do a five-year deal so you don't have to come back every
year? I'd like to, but as it states, this is the annual plan. Next year we'll have the five-year agreement along with this.
Yeah. Okay. Open for public comment. Commissioners, have any questions for the chief? Motion for approval?
I'll make a motion to approve the operating plan between Story County Fire Protection District and the USDA, Forest Service, Humboldt-Tioga National Forest, and the USDI, Bureau of Land Management, Carson City District, and authorize the chairman and fire chief to sign.
Second motion.
Moved and second to approve this operating plan. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Quick break, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, since next up is going to be item 15, and we're going to get into.
I ask for a quick break, if I may.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Sorry. Since we're going to be getting into tentative budget conversations here, let's go ahead and take about a 15-minute recess.